Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on government by commerce. When we come back. Now, let me ask you this. What do you think is wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious by now that something is terribly wrong with the Ten Commandments, because they have been banned from our public schools, they've been banned from our public institutions, and in fact, banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple time-tested laws, we see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place, and now they teach the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, our public institutions, and we've made them a part of our national psyche. Now, this is a very radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years, don't you think? Are you aware, for instance, that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but your daughter can have an abortion? That's right. She can have an abortion arranged through that same public school without even your knowledge, much less your consent. That's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and this national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers in 1787 at the Constitutional Convention not only practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And there's still at least one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits that you receive for their observance. Now, every law has a penalty. You do not have to know what the penalty to a law is in order to suffer from its effect. So whether you call that the Mosaic Law, the law of God, the common law, natural law, or karma, or something else, it's automatic. It works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which are just the natural penalties for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It's free. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, and it's entertaining. And best of all, it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, and that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine. Send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. Well, John D. Rockefeller made an observation. He said, competition is a sin. Now, that's from America's foremost capitalist, or at least what we have always thought of being America's foremost capitalist. That's John D. Rockefeller. Well, Franklin Sanders wrote a piece called Government by Commerce. I thought it caught my eye, and I thought it would catch your eye. This comes from the Money Changer for October 2006. Government by Commerce, written by Franklin Sanders. If you'd like a copy of the Money Changer, ask for the October 2006 edition. And you can order a copy from the Money Changer at 888-218-9226. Again, that's area code 888-218-9226. I'll give you that name and number a couple of times before we finish. Here's what Franklin Sanders had to say. Contemplating our present government, the American founding fathers must be doing 360 revolutions per minute in their graves. That thought struck me lately while pondering our present tyranny. The last word won't seem too strong when you consider the rights that we have now lost. A common law country has been converted into a commercial law dictatorship where government serves only to run the economy and government for the corporation's benefit, although veiled with democracy and elections. When our founding fathers wrote the Constitution, everyone understood what the common law was and what their common law rights were. Today, almost nobody does. And when you dig into, when you look for those rights, you're going to understand that the entire system has now been hijacked. In this discussion, I'm not going to lay out each and every single way government steals, usurps, or violates your rights every day, but I'll just pull back the veil enough for you to gaze down into the bottomless pit of what great hole that has now begun to grow dizzy. The watershed in U.S. history was the war between the states. Neither the South nor the North won that war. It was the corporations that won the war. And you can call the corporations big business or the establishment or mercantilists or Hamiltonians or a lot of other names. But for simplicity's sake here, I'll just call them the corporations. Furnishing money and supplies to the Yankee Army made the corporations, and it created vast fortunes that were, up to that time, unimaginable before the war. And it also helped to create the phony elite that owns those fortunes and controls those corporations to this day. Effectively, although seldom visibly, the United States government, with all of its tentacles and rules and regulations, entails and entrails, exists to feed those corporations and to rule the unruly. That's us, you and me, the people who used to be free. Under the common law, we are free to do just about anything we want to do within the constraints of the Ten Commandments. If you want to cut hair or doctor patients, pull teeth, plumb houses, open a bank, build a house, dig ditches, lay bricks, or build bridges, fine, have at it. All of these and thousands of other callings were called common law occupations, or occupations of common right. They were open at will to every man who wanted to practice them. That was the common law right that was available to all men, because God laid on them a common duty to provide for the self and the family. Did you want to start a business? Say a grocery store, a restaurant, a hospital, clothing store, a bank, stock brokerage. Well, go ahead. If told they had to go to government and ask the government's permission to get a license to do these things, your founding fathers, or probably your grandfather or great-grandfather, would have simply burned down the courthouse and then sown the site with salt and with the politician's bones. Now, John D. Rockefeller, who assembled the gigantic Standard Oil monopoly shortly after the Civil War, explained that the goal of the corporations was this. He said, "Competition is a sin, and every possible competitor must be stalled, prevented, and if ever established, bought off or rooted out." Rockefeller followed his own advice, building the Standard Oil monopoly, but the government has also followed it for him. Government now has destroyed our common law rights and economic freedoms in three ways: professional licensing, business licensing, and government regulation. Professional licensing destroys the common law right to freely enter the trade, craft, or profession of your choice. Business licensing destroys your freedom to own a business. And government regulation crushes everyone who survives the first two. The corporation's great goal is to control the whole U.S. economy. That control enables them to exploit every person and every business to the corporation's benefit. They look at us, you and me, the same way that a dairy farmer looks at a cow. A cow is a brainless thing, good only to be milked. Now, before the Great Depression, the corporations advanced their control over the economy under the mask of the public interest. It was the so-called progressive movement. You won't go too far wrong assuming that every name in government and politics delivers exactly the opposite of what its name promises. Brought about, of course, by regulation in the Food and Drug Administration, or industry, as well as government control over monopolies and trusts. It goes like, "Oh, please, Brer Fox, don't throw me in that briar patch." Regulation, of course, was merely a mechanism to set in concrete the corporation's market shares and cartel arrangements. And since they control the regulation writing process, it allows them to write out any hope for their competitors. Along with some professional licensing, physicians and dentists, for instance, that was as far as the corporations had progressed. In 1913, the entire monetary system was hijacked when the Federal Reserve Act gave a private corporation the power to make its own script, legal tender, the same as creating money out of thin air. It was a cartel, the banking cartel. And it was the banking system. The supposed passage of the 16th Amendment the same year spawned the income tax. That was another opportunity to keep the eager masses impoverished and in their place. Well, World War I came along, and World War I gave the corporations a war emergency mask under which they could further collectivize the United States economy, and they exercised it to the hilt. After the war, the Federal Reserve engineered the boom of the 1920s with floods of new money, and then contracted the flood in time for the Great Depression. That was the next emergency. First, the New Deal's Social Security and unemployment relieved the corporations of the necessity to care for unproductive workers and to forestall the development of a starving proletariat threatening the entire system. No communist revolutions would be allowed in Detroit. Then, the New Deal tried all sorts of experiments to collectivize the economy further. Under the Italian fascist pattern of corporatism, Franklin D. Roosevelt created corporations for every trade, every craft, and every industry. States then took their cue from the federal government and began creating state-enforced cartel corporations like the boards of accountants, or architects, or auctioneers, and barbers, and contractors, and cosmetologists, funeral directors, and embalmers, surveyors, and real estate, and realtors, and go on ad nauseum. Independent practitioners were offered grandfather clauses to get them to join without protest, while new practitioners were required to perform some sort of education and probation period until they could receive a license to practice their profession or their occupation. All of that, of course, narrowly restricts the number of tradesmen or professionals in any given field, and it keeps out newcomers. It keeps them out under the penalties of criminal prosecution. It helps to raise rates and to keep those rates high. It controls the trade, and it totally destroys the common law right to enter and to practice that trade. In short, it destroys free enterprise. World War II left the United States with a fully, centrally planned economy. And after the war, the assumption grew universal that a proper function of government is managing the economy. Multitudinous and many-headed statutes were passed to ensure prosperity and full employment. The Constitution and the rights that the Constitution had protected were now dead. They were as dead as a ball-peen hammer. Studying this, and on and off over many years, I believed that hardly any new outrage could shock me. But that was before George Bush and the Republicans came to power in 2000. You would have to cast back all the way to the Ulysses S. Grant administration to find another era where the Treasury door was thrown open with such flippant openness. Wait, I hasten to add that the Democrats aren't any different to the Republicans. All of these politicians and political parties serve the same corporations. But it seems to me that the Clintonites were not nearly as blatant and as unashamed at eating at the corporate trough as are or were the Republicans. Now, a National Animal Identification Act, it's called the NAIS, has been enacted, and it offers us a classic example. First of all, let me assure you that no animal health crisis whatever exists in this country. There is no mad cow disease. There is no bird flu threat. And any substance to those or countless other threats amounts to no more than usual public health concerns. However, there is a corporate profit crisis among agricultural corporations, especially the ones that feed out of the export beef trough. They want to export beef to Japan, but the Japanese are very picky about mad cow and other diseases. So to ensure their market, the agribusiness corporations needed some governmental guarantee for the Japanese market. And although it was touted as a government plan, this NAIS plan, in fact, was hatched at the agribusiness-controlled National Institute for Animal Agriculture back in 2002, long before the USDA began trying to put it into effect. In order to protect their export market and to put their small farmer competitors out of business, agribusiness wants to force every animal owner in the country to put on radio frequency identification tags, they're called RFID tags, on every animal. Well, maybe not every animal, maybe we can exempt cats and dogs, I don't remember. But after public outcry, the USDA backed off on the mandatory aspects, or at least delayed their imposition until the year 2010. The NAIS program will cripple small producers. It will raise their cost with no gains. It will create a huge new government bureaucracy like Homeland Security. It will create enormous artificial profits for companies who make and sell these RFID tags. And it will ultimately drive thousands of farmers out of business forever. Farming is the last occupation of common law right. And that occupation is in the process of being gobbled down the agribusiness gullet at this moment. Now let's take a look and see how this works. Those farmers who do cling on will find that after they have spent the money for the RFID tags and the tagging equipment, agribusiness will then track their animals through feeding and slaughter, and they will call them back demanding that they improve the marbling, or improve the cutting weight, or improve the grade, or improve whatever else on their animals by buying bull semen only from them. Thus, the NAIS, which was hatched by big agribusiness and pushed through the legislatures and Congress by agribusiness and is wholly owned by politicians, will further concentrate agribusiness's vertical and horizontal hold on the beef breeding and production and then destroy the freedom to farm and then squander American farmers' long and carefully cultivated genetic capital. Just give them 10 or 20 years and agribusiness will ruin the beef cattle genetic pool as it has already ruined swine, and as it's already ruined agriculture in every aspect. Here's another example. Published in the Chicago Sun-Times on September the 13th, 2006, was this news item from Lansing, Michigan. It said, Michigan girls entering the sixth grade next year would have to be vaccinated against cervical cancer under legislation backed Tuesday by a bipartisan group of female lawmakers. The legislation is the first of its kind in the United States, said Republican State Senator Beverly Hammerstrom. The vaccine was approved by the Food and Drug Administration for use in girls and women and has been hailed as a breakthrough in cancer prevention. A government panel said that ideally the vaccine should be given before girls become sexually active. Some conservatives have expressed concern that schools would make the vaccine a requirement for enrollment. They have argued that requiring the vaccine would infringe upon parents' rights and then send a message that underage sex is permissible, probably even to be desired. So let's unpack all of this according to the logic of the commercial government. In other words, let's follow the money. First of all, the Food and Drug Administration does not exist to further any new health discoveries and technologies. The Food and Drug Administration exists to prevent their adoption. They put new drugs through multi-zillion dollar trials and regulatory procedures so that only enormous corporations can afford to develop them. This both prevents and punishes competition from the small guys. If Dr. Joe Blow discovered a cure for cancer tomorrow, the Food and Drug Administration would crush him like an ant immediately because it would threaten the enormous cancer industry, which is more than $500 billion a year. That's a half a trillion. Boys and girls, that's starting to get into big money. And I know of at least two doctors that have already been crushed by the Food and Drug Administration. And second, so that the corporations can profit, children will be forcibly medicated, even against their parents' wishes. Now, do I need to mention that God Almighty himself has given control over children to parents, let alone the common law? Whoops. Or was that just a detail? Third, at least half, if not all, of the experts on the government panel, remember, recommending the vaccination, receive very large consulting fees from the very corporations who manufacture these vaccines. Now, I say that without checking because I know only too well that that is the common pattern. Fourth, the Conservative Party, which postures as the party of protecting freedom, is introducing this legislation. And of course, the Liberal Party, which also postures as the party of protecting freedom, will jump on the bandwagon also. And fifth, to pay for these vaccines and vaccinations, the government will spend large amounts sweated from the taxpayer, which will pour directly into the corporation's coffers. And sixth, the vaccination program will be enforced through government schooling, which since the 19th century has been the corporation's backyard, where they ensure that America's children will be trained to be voracious consumers and docile workers. The best thing that could happen to your children is to be forbidden to register for public school, and you educate your child at home and homeschool. And then seven, the politicians will fight the issue under the false masks of women's health and prenatal freedom, or parental freedom, I should say, not prenatal, but parental freedom, without ever mentioning its real reason for being, to pour money into corporate coffers. Now, do you understand how this game works? Now, should you despair? You know, it may sound like a pretty depressing picture, but I am far from despairing. The sheer lunatic scope of this NAIS, that is a tag on every animal in the United States, proves that corporations and the people who run these corporations have reached that state of pride necessary for a fall. After all, Solomon instructed us that pride goes before a fall. And the more tightly that they control the economy, the worse it gets. After 140 years of this economic crisis, these economic crises have grown more frequent, more violent, and more encompassing. Since the commercial governmental system has been exported around the world, it now binds the fates of more and more nations together, rendering then a worldwide crisis ever more likely. Unlike the crises that we now see regularly, every 2 years or so, the corporations will be at some point in time unable to manage the really big one when it comes. Now, on the other hand, the system may not implode. It may slowly burn up without a crisis, constantly consuming capital, constantly widening its embrace, constantly becoming less and less efficient, until at last it simply dies, starved to death and helpless against the unkillable human desire to work and prosper and be free. But how long is that going to take? Well, I don't know. But for some things, I operate on a very long time horizon, maybe 100 years or more. Things may change tomorrow, or I may not live to see those changes, but my children and my children's children and their children will certainly live to see it. That I'm quite satisfied to train the replacements who will build a new, just, and free economic system. It may look like we live on a farm, but really it's a whole new world. And he signs off Franklin Sanders. Now, I read that article that Frank wrote there, and some of it I agree with. And there was a couple of points in here that I thought he hadn't quite covered very well, and I thought, well, let me see if I can put a little editorial comment in here. First of all, let me address the Michigan girls entering the sixth grade next year would have to be vaccinated against cervical cancer under legislation back Tuesday by a bipartisan group of female lawmakers. That's a fiction. It's a legal fiction. Now, I've explained this from time to time, and when I read articles like this, I think that the authors, if they knew, now I don't know what Franklin Sanders knows or doesn't know, he may not know this, but all vaccinations are voluntary under what we call a law of general applicability. So here's what the legislature does. They go out and they enact a law called the law of general applicability, and they say everybody has to be vaccinated. Well, now, hang on a second. does that include people who are immune system dependent upon certain drugs that these vaccines would certainly kill? Are there no medical exemptions for these girls who are 12 years or 16 or 22 years old who are signing up for school and maybe they have AIDS and this vaccine is going to kill them? There's no exemption for these girls. They all have to be vaccinated. It's the law, you know. No, they don't have to be vaccinated. In fact, those girls will go to their doctors, and their doctors will write up an excuse, kind of like your kid, you know, that was absent yesterday from school. And they'll take the excuse in, and they'll put that down and say, oh, okay, well, this is an excused absence. This is an excused vaccination exception or exemption. Well, what are you going to do with the religious objectors like George Gordon, who is a Hebrew and practices Hebrew theology, and we object on religious grounds, on First Amendment grounds? What about the Scientologists and the Amish and Jehovah's Witnesses and a whole host and plethora of other religious groups and organizations, which, by the way, while they're a minority, representing only about 12% of the American population, a 12% minority represents 36 million people in America who are not going to have their daughters vaccinated because of their religious beliefs. Did you know that? Now, it is true that 88% of Americans believe in vaccinations, and for 88 people out of 100, they will certainly welcome this breakthrough in cancer therapy and cancer prevention. And God bless them. I hope they all get a shot. In fact, if these shots are as good as they say they are, you ought to get two. Two. My God, if something's good, wouldn't twice the number be twice as good? Now, I, for one, disagree with that, and I'm going to take exception here to Mr. Sanders in this section of the article here, which is on page 5, at the top of the page in the center column over here, and tell you plainly that there are exemptions and exceptions. Now, here's the way they break down. There are three ways to stay out of vaccination. Number one is religious, and it's the biggest club that you have. It's the First Amendment Religious Free Exercise Clause, which does not apply to Catholics, Protestants, and Jews, because all of you people believe in vaccination. So shut up. Get in line, roll up your sleeves, and get your shot. Now, other than you mainstream religious people over here that don't have religious objections because your church and groupthink have decided what you should believe and what you do believe, and it may be sincere. There are some of us that have truly and sincerely religiously held beliefs in opposition to vaccination. You apply that at the time, which is called failure to object timely, is fatal. So when the time comes, you object. And then, of course, the school nurse is going to say, but it's the law. Well, I'm sure that it is the law, and I don't deny that. But I'm an exception to the law because I have a religious objection. And if need be, we will go into the fiery furnace or the lion's den, if that's what it takes. And the case that defines this is called Seeger versus United States, decided in 1963. S-E-E-G-E-R. Or it's titled U.S. v. Seeger, S-E-E-G-E-R. All right. I think it's cited at 380 U.S. 163, if I remember right, but that's off the top of my head. The second objection that comes in here is a medical objection. I mean, it could well be that you have a medical problem that would forestall or preempt you from this vaccination. If so, go to your doctor and get it. And number three is a personal objection. And here's the way these three objections break down in 50 states. In some states, you can use any one or all three. In some states, you can use two, but not all three. And in some states, you can use one. And in two states, you can use none of the above, but you must seek a court order on one of the above three grounds, of which personal objection will not carry the day, but medical and religious will, and those two states are Mississippi and West Virginia. So if you live in those two states, then you're going to have to get a court order. In all of the other states, you can use one of these three. Most states, well, let me back up and say, all states accept religious free exercise or a medical exemption, and most states will accept your personal disapproval. All except those two, Mississippi and West Virginia. Now remember this. If vaccination was absolutely mandatory 100% of the time, then you would be obviating the First Amendment and medical free exercise, and that doesn't happen in this country. Never has, and it isn't here. This is what we call a law of general applicability. It applies to everyone, but sept. And it's those but septs that you need to fit yourself into. And again, Catholics, Protestants, and Jews need not apply. Sit down, shut up, roll up your sleeve. All right, now that's the story on vaccinations. Not that I am castigating Franklin Sanders in any way. I actually recommend The Money Changer. It's one of the three newsletters that I recommend. And you can get a subscription by just calling 888, toll-free 888-218-9226. This is the October 2006 edition of The Money Changer newsletter. Hey, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and our archives, and that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Keep in mind that all of these programs are archived every day. They go onto the archives. And you can tune into the archives by going to our webpage, and then you can download these programs on 32-bit quality. It's MP this and CGF that. And they got 15 different ways that you do this. But keep in mind that there's more than 2,000 of these programs that are on the air. So if you hear a program and then you miss the next one, and then you hear a program, you miss the next one in a series, and you say, my God, that was an interesting story, and I want to get all of them, well, then go to the webpage. They're put on there by date and by title. So they're in alphabetical order, and they're also on there by date. So if you knew that this was on December the 20th, let's say, well, then all you got to do is go to December 20th on the archives and take a look at that series. We get a lot of calls here. People say, oh, my God, I can't get you on the radio station here all the time. What am I going to do? So it's the archives. Remember, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. And the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, the endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you do hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. Don't blame them. Blame me. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, remember our website is georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. We are reviewing the October 2006 edition of the Money Changer article, Government by Commerce. A second issue that I wanted to take exception to, or if I don't use the word take exception to, let me point something out, or let me add to that, or let me show you what the solution is. Oftentimes we read an article and then down at the bottom of the page it says, should I despair? Well, after having read this article, Franklin, I was despairing. Fortunately, based upon my legal training, I know that there is an answer to the riddle. And again, maybe Franklin Sanders didn't know the answer to the riddle, but let's go to this animal NAIS story. Franklin Sanders has a farm, I have a farm, and I received the same information from the Department of Agriculture, and they said that they wanted me to voluntarily participate in this NAIS regulatory program. I decided that it's not good for George Gordon, so I'm not going to participate. But they're going to enact a law of general applicability, and this law makes all the sense in the world, and I'm not an anarchist, and I'm not advocating that you people violate this law. After all, Dianne Feinstein and Barbara Boxer and Ted Kennedy, these people who wouldn't know which end of a cow to get on to get milk, are going to enact this legislation for you because it's good for you. But the other day, my wife was up in St. Paul, Minnesota, to the Acres Convention, and Charlie Walters delivered a dynamite address on this subject of NAIS. That's this tagging of animals, this bureaucratic nightmare that's coming down on all farmers. It's the destruction of the beef industry is what it is, in favor of corporate America. But anyway, he delivered a dynamite address, and he says, just don't volunteer. Just don't volunteer. What's going to happen if 5 million people who have animals refuse to do it? You know, it's simple enough. The thing will fall on its face. That's the bottom line, and the corporations can go to hell in a handbasket. Not one person stood up and cheered Walters when he made the address. My wife said, you know, all of those farmers should have been on their feet cheering, and nobody got up. Nobody said a word. They all just sat there silently like, oh, yeah, we're all suffering from groupthink. Oh, my God, the Department of Agriculture, the government, they've got a law, and we're going to have to identify all of our animals and go to hell in a handbasket because it's the law. All right, now let's wake up. It is the law when you're dealing in commerce, and that's why I'm the champion of private business. The reason that we use Federal Reserve notes is because Federal Reserve notes are commercial. Gold and silver are private. The holy grail of law is private property, and when government takes your property, it's called a takings action in violation of the Fifth Amendment. I don't deny that the government can come in here and take all of my cattle, and they may do that. because I'm not going to volunteer to register my cattle. But the day they come in and take my cattle, I'm going to sue in the court of claims for a takings action to get compensation for that taking. I'm not going to volunteer. And here's why. When you go down and sign up, it's your failure to object timely. But by the same token, if you don't tag all of your animals, you will not be able to sell those animals in commerce. And all of you people out there are engaged in trade, commerce, business, and industry, which affects the public interest. So when a farmer up in Alberta, Canada, sells a cow, and the cow travels across the border in a truck to Washington State and spreads mad cow disease, that cow is affecting trade, commerce, business, and industry, which affects the public interest. It affects everybody who's going to eat that hamburger that comes out of that cow or that milk that comes out of that cow. That's commerce. And Congress has carte blanche to regulate trade, commerce, business, and industry under the Commerce Clause. So if you're engaged in commerce, sit down, shut up, fold your hands, and get your tag. That's the law. Now, if you'd like to make a change, then get out of commerce and go back to private business. That's what I do. That's what I sell. That's what I recommend. That's what I teach, private business. Private business, now remember, is private property. Private property is the holy grail of law. But I can't sell my cattle for Federal Reserve note dollars in a commercial environment called the sale barn, because those cattle would enter commerce. Now, we have something that's very similar to that right now. All cattle in the United States have to be vaccinated for brucellosis, and there's a couple of other things that they need to be vaccinated for that I don't know about, or I can't remember. But brucellosis is one of them. It's one of these phony baloney deals that Franklin Sanders pointed out is done for the benefit of the pharmaceutical companies and veterinarians, and it's done for the benefit of commercial interests. Doesn't have anything to do with Joe Sixpack, Sally Housewife, or reality. Has to do with business. Has to do with profits. Has to do with corporate fascism. And God bless America, if you want corporate fascism, you know, this is the place to engage in. But fortunately for all of us, we have our First Amendment that protects us through our religious beliefs and practices. And we also have our rights to property. Now, you do not have a right to a Federal Reserve note, but you do have a right to a gold coin. One's property and one's commerce. You do have a right to your calling. You have a right to be a farmer. You have a right to your property. But you do not have a right to exercise that occupation, that profession, that calling, in a commercial enterprise without being licensed, bonded, and insured. So when Franklin Sanders points out that the government came in here under the Roosevelt administration, first of all, they took our gold and silver away. That was to reduce you to commerce so that you could not do business in a private capacity. So they took your gold and silver away from you. Once they got you involved in commerce, now they could regulate and control you. So they came to you plumbers and said, you got to have a plumber's license. They said to you barbers, you got to have a barber's license. And you doctors, you got to have a doctor's license. What if you operated in private business in gold and silver, and you operated under Wolf Company versus Industrial Court, and you didn't affect any public interest, such as trade, commerce, business, and industry, affecting a public interest? I know it's a wild new concept, but let's try it. Now, George Gordon has cattle. None of my cattle have brucellosis vaccinations. I have organic cattle. I have organic milk. We do not use chemical or commercial fertilizers. We do not use chemical or commercial sprays. We don't use any vaccines. We don't use any GMO feeds here in our feeding operations. We have grass-fed beef. We have grass-fed cows. And we have organic milk. It's unpasteurized and unhomogenized. Now, I know for most of you, you're sitting there saying, oh, my God, this guy's a lunatic. He's on the right-wing lunatic fringe. Okay. And there's a small minority of us that hold this belief. So just bear with us. Let us practice freedom by ourselves. Let us be real stupid. Could we? Could we just be real stupid without you butting in? All of you evangelists out there, all you do-gooders, thank you. Now, my cattle don't have any vaccinations, but I don't sell my cattle at the sale barn. I sell my cattle privately for gold coin to people like you who want to buy clean cows without snake venom and monkey pus, GMOs, or Monsanto. And there's quite a few people out there. In fact, I'll tell you how many people out there that want to buy organic food, 12%. 12%. Same number of people that don't want vaccinations want organic food. 36 million people, coast to coast and border to border. 36 million customers out there that want to buy my organic beef. And that's what ticks off the Cattlemen's Association, because there are literally thousands of us little guys out here that are competitors, and they want to eliminate us from the competition. Makes all the sense in the world. I don't blame them. Hell, if I was Tyson or Swift Packing or Archer Daniels Midland, I would want to eliminate George Gordon also, so that I could sell my snake venom and monkey pus shot up cows to people in the Safeway and the Kroger stores, like they do everybody else. They're not satisfied with 88% of the market. Hell, they want 100%. Now, if perchance I were to sell one of my cows, which I can do, I can sell my cow over at the sale barn today. I can take her over to the sale barn and run her through the sale. And then right away, they're going to note that she doesn't have a metal tag in her ear. And that cow cannot leave the sale barn until she's shot up. And so they have a veterinarian there every sale day. And any cows that come in there that aren't vaccinated, which there's always quite a few, Then they vaccinate them, and then you no longer have organic beef. Ladies and gentlemen, you cannot get an organic cow out of a sale barn. There aren't any. It's against the law. It ain't going to happen. It hasn't happened in this country in more than 50 years, and it isn't going to happen tomorrow. Oftentimes I have people say, well, you charge too much for your cows, Gordon. I'm going over to the sale barn and buy a cow. Have at it. I don't care. Competition's out there. You want to buy a cow that's been shot up with snake venom and monkey pus and fed GMO feed? Go get her. They're for sale. And those people are good people, and they need money, and they need to pay their bills just like I do. But I go to a lot of extra trouble to make sure that my cattle are 100% clean. And for that, you got to pay me a higher price. And furthermore, I don't even take Federal Reserve notes. You got to pay me in gold coin. Because I don't deal in trade, commerce, business, and industry. And these laws affect commerce, and they come under the Commerce Clause of the Constitution. So if you're selling your cattle through the sale barn, get your number, tag your cows, and shut your mouth. Now, on the other hand, if you don't want to do that, Mr. Sanders, then what you do is you sell your cattle to private buyers, which is what private business is all about. The sale barn is public and commercial, and they do business in checks, Discover, MasterCard, and Visa. I don't. I do business in gold and silver coin. I don't take MasterCharge, Visa, or Discover, and I certainly won't take your check or your Federal Reserve notes. Now, when you come here and you want to buy one of my cows, you can buy one of my cows privately. And that's all this legislation is aimed at, is public commercial producers, of which every farmer in America, for practical purposes, is a commercial producer. He produces for the commercial market. He sells his cattle, he sells his chickens, he sells his pigs to Tyson and ADM and Cargill. I don't. I don't sell anything to Safeway or Kroger or Tyson or Cargill. Now, in 1933, Franklin D. Roosevelt and the Democrats took our gold away from us. Boys and girls, they did not take our gold coin away from us for no good purpose. They took our gold coin away from us so that we could not do private business. They did that so that they could force all of us into commerce under the Commerce Clause so that they could regulate and control us. You want to cut hair? You can cut hair all day long. You just can't cut hair out on Main Street with a sign that says George's Barbershop. That's all. Because a barbershop on Main Street that is open to trade, commerce, business, and industry, that takes Visa and MasterCard checks and Federal Reserve notes, is commercial, and it's regulated under the Commerce Clause. And Congress has the power to regulate all businesses that come under the Commerce Clause. That's all. That's all they're doing. They're doing their job. Now, I don't deny that there is a mad cow problem. I don't have a mad cow problem because I don't have any mad cows. I don't allow commercial cattle to come onto my farm. I don't buy cattle from the sale barn and bring them onto my farm, fatten them up, and then sell them to somebody else who then trucks them across the state lines to some other place. That's commerce. And that spreads mad cow disease and blackleg and brucellosis and all kinds of other diseases. Hey, kids, this is bad business. When I was a kid, I lived in a little valley called Eel River Valley. And all the cattle that were in Eel River Valley were bred, lived, milked, were butchered, died, and were sold right there in the valley. It was local. If there was a disease that broke out, it only affected the Eel River Valley. If some disease broke out over in the Central Valley, then that was a Central Valley problem. If some disease broke out in Florida, that was a Florida problem. That's not true anymore, boys and girls. We now have free trade worldwide, and we have free trade all over America. We have cattle. It's very common for cattle to be bred, raised in Alberta, and sold to a dairy farm in Florida, Texas, California, or Minnesota. It's international in scope, and it's certainly national in scope. And so they want to be able to trace a cow that turns up sick. You just saw this with E. coli. They want to be able to trace the spinach, the onions, the cattle back to their source. And they want to be able to do it by computer. And they want to be able to do it instantaneously. When somebody gets sick in Boston, Massachusetts, at a Taco Bell, they want to be able to identify the onion, the field, the patch, the packing company, and the guy that harvested the onion. They want a record of it. That's commerce. I produce onions. I sell onions. But I'm not going to sell my onions to a packing plant. I don't sell my onions to Taco Bell. I'm not engaged in trade, commerce, business, and industry. Government began in the Roosevelt years to create this fascist corporate welfare state in the interests of corporate business. In it, and they complement one another. The corporations hire the lobbyists who bribe the politicians to create the laws that benefit the corporations at the expense of you and I. I don't know why you and I, the voters, keep voting to put these people back into office, but for some reason you people out there want Dianne Feinstein and Barbara Boxer and Ted Kennedy and George Bush. And God love you. If those are the people you want to rule over you, line up and get your tags, record your farm, and do business in commerce. But you should be aware that commerce is called Canaanite trafficking in the Bible. And your God told you not to participate in commerce. And your God told you not to participate in unjust weights and balances, which is the commercial paper of the corporations in commerce. And for whatever reason, you decided that no, the Federal Reserve sounds like a pretty good plan to me. And you decided that Federal Reserve notes seem like a pretty good medium of exchange to me. And you've decided that commerce seems to be a pretty good program to me. Okay, well, now you have the merger of the Federal Reserve notes, the Federal Reserve, the government, and the corporations, and now they have put that together with commerce, and now they're going to regulate and control you right out of business. Well, it's right out of business if you stay in the commercial world. Now, years ago, I decided that commerce wasn't good for me. I came to that conclusion when I read in the Bible that commerce was bad. So I said, well, I think I'll get out of commerce. If I get out of commerce, how am I going to sell my cows? How am I going to sell my milk? How am I going to sell my onions and spinach? I'm going to sell them privately. I'm going to sell them under contract. Privately to people like you. Well, those 12% out there that want to buy privately, want to buy organic produce, want to buy organic clean meat, want to buy raw unpasteurized milk, want to buy from a guy who has clean animals. And that's me. And there's a little niche market out here. So I hope Franklin Sanders does not record or register his livestock. And he's a subsistence farmer. I read his paper every month. And he usually has a little article in here, a little story about him and his family and about their cows and sheep and pigs and chickens and ducks and so on. And more power to him. He wants to eat clean food. And he can sell that clean food to his neighbors, to people like you and me, as long as he stays out of trade, commerce, business, and industry. That's the secret. You've got to stay out of commerce. And a couple of cases along that line are Hale versus Hinkle. Hale versus Hinkle, cited at 201 U.S. 43, go to page 75. And then Wickard versus Filburn, cited at about 317, I believe it is, 317 U.S. page 1, if I remember right. That's 2, Wickard versus Filburn. And then Seeger versus U.S., I think that was 380 U.S. 163. And you put these cases together, and when you put them together, they tell you a story. Our Supreme Court and our Constitution work well. Stick with it and stay out of commerce. Hey, we're about out of time. We're going to have to leave it right there. Let me remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. It is non-commercial. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.